standing right here.
Okay, brilliant. So if we could just have a few seconds of silence, that we get a nice clean edit, and then I will start with our broad appeal, specially designed theme music. Oh my God. All right, here we go. You ready, Sean? So I think for the first part, let's use the two mics for ourselves. And then when we bring everybody else up, we'll give them those mics. So you can hold that mic. This is, you're getting a little insight into what it's normally
we're,
like.
We're in a relationship.
Okay. Can we have the silence, please?
He's doing a show for the first time in his life.
That's your choice, is it?
Visualize yourself in a room full of people.
Why is no one ready?
It's real time! You hear me? Real time! Time to get real, not playback!
God, torture me! God, torture me! You like making fun of me, don't you?
Well, how can I say in a few minutes what it's taken me a lifetime to understand?
Am I being tried for witchcraft?
How dear of you to let me out of jail.
One show like that could pull this whole network right out of the hole now, Frank! It's being handed to us on a plate. Let's not blow it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Broad Appeal Live! Thank you very much. Broad Appeal is the podcast dedicated to female-driven films from the not-so-distant past. I'm Brian.
I'm Sean.
It's very exciting to be here at Fridge Queer Film and Arts Fest at Hackney House. Sean, how are you feeling?
I'm fucking exhausted, Brian. And super as always, thank you.
Very good, very good. Can I ask, just for a show of hands of our studio audience here, how many of you have ever seen, how many of you have ever listened to Broad Appeal before? Oh, great. Okay. A reasonably good proportion of the audience. How many of you subscribe to it? Because that's all we really care about. Okay. Those of you who listen but don't subscribe, get on that. All right? Okay. Excellent. Very good. How many of you are the kind of people who might find yourself going down a YouTube hole watching videos over and over again of actresses from your favorite movies or their Oscar acceptance speeches or their appearances on Ellen or anything like that? Anybody feel that they're in that category? All right, good. Well, then most of you are in the right place. The rest of you, if that's not your bag, then, well, you're in for an exciting 90 minutes. Okay, so that is what we are here to do today. Sean, do you have any reflections on what it's like to be doing our very first live podcast?
Well, I can't believe we've come all the way from Lambeth. We've made it to Hackney. We've made it from our tiny bedroom to a slightly larger room. It's dizzying, really. Yeah.
Very good. Okay. So the format is going to be, Sean and I will be doing our usual banter, as we often do, which we've already started, and we have three actually very funny professional people who are going to come up in a moment, and they are going to take over the show at a certain point and certainly be far superior than us. But just to let you know, what you're all here to do is to crown the first ever entrant into the Broad Appeal Hall of Fame.
Basically Broad Appeal All-Stars 1.
Yeah, All-Stars 1.
So if it's shit, you'll be understanding for the second one.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah. So this is Broad Appeal All-Stars 1. There is no prize of $100,000, but there is, what, a lifetime supply of cosmetics
Anastasia
Miss, Beverly Hills.
Miss Sporty from
and Hamburger
that's
Mary's.
That's an actual brand, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, okay. So we have five women who have been nominated by ourselves and by the panelists, who we are saying these are iconic actresses that queer people should love, that any people should love, really.
Wow.
And we'll each be standing for them for different reasons.
Is that right? What does that mean, standing?
Trying to be down with the lingo. As you know, I'm the oldest person in this room, so I'm trying to use the internet slang.
Yes.
Standing? Explain what it means.
I think it means like being obsessively fanatic, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah?
It's like a fan.
Yeah. It's a what?
From Eminem.
I didn't know that.
We can't invoke that name.
I'm sorry. Here. I don't like it now. I don't like it anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, it means we are obsessive fans. And it's fair to say, isn't it, Sean, that the two women that we have selected as our first nominees are people that we're pretty obsessive about. And I think also people that we relate to, yeah? Because if you have an interest in an actress who appears in films, and you watch her films, and you kind of memorize the lines, and you feel probably some form of identification with them, I would say. Would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, I think this is both my id... id ego and super ego on
all together. It's like a mélange, a Freudian mélange.
Yeah, it's a delicious. What do you call those creme caramel of It's a creme caramel of pathology.
Mmm.
Yeah.
That's our pull quote for tonight's evening. Okay, so with that in mind, we're going to warm up the room by offering our nominees before we bring up our three incredible panelists to present theirs.
Yeah, so I can die on my arse before people who've actually prepared get to do it.
Okay, so Sean, I'm going to turn the floor over to you to present our first candidate. I'm going to attempt here to operate the clips when they're necessary. So just give me the cue when it's needed.
Yeah, so the good thing about tonight is that if you don't like what we're saying, you get to watch a few clips of some movies. Like, and you didn't pay any money, so that's good. So tonight, the five actresses who have been chosen by us and the panelists have never been on the show before as the main feature. And I'm going first, and I would like to talk to you about a woman who many of you know, and if you don't know, you actually do know, because she's one of those women who appears in things all the time. She looks a lot like my Auntie Mary. I don't know if that means anything to anyone but me, but trust me, she looks a lot like my Auntie Mary. And she is a two-time Academy Award-winning actress in the only category that matters, supporting. And she has appeared in a range of films. She's played... she's run the gamut. She's been mothers, neurotic women... mothers, neurotic actresses, and she's mothers.
She's played at least one secretary.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in the Associate.
Oh,
remember?
A classic film. Everyone should know that. I don't have to reference anymore. Should I give some clues?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, she looks like my Auntie Mary. That's the first clue. Okay. Okay, so it's Diane Wiest. No? Come on. Okay, I'm going to say it one more time. Remember, this isn't a podcast. It's Diane Wiest. Okay, who's Diane Wiest? She's the mother in Edward Scissorhands. Okay? What else will they know? Oh, there we are. Yes, she's also the mother in La Cage aux Folles. No, The Birdcage. Let's do that again.
Yeah.
Lots of Woody Allen.
That's what I was going for. That's my punchline. Yeah. She won her two Oscars for Woody Allen films. And anyway. So she won her two Oscars for Bullets Over Broadway, which was her second one, and her first one was Hannah and Her Sisters. So Brian, I think I'm ready. I think I'm officially ready. Not for a clip, but to begin. Okay.
So you haven't begun yet?
No, I haven't begun yet.
Okay. It starts now.
I'm here to talk about Diane Wiest, okay? And Squarespace. But mostly Diane Wiest. Diane Wiest plays a pivotal figure... it's a podcast. Diane Wiest plays a pivotal role in my life. Picture it. It's 5 years ago. I'm living in a squalid little warehouse in North London. I'm dating a slew of men, and they're all dropping off like flies, okay? One morning, the one who I deign to bring home to my mattress on the floor is some Yaley, okay? And I say to him, here's a good idea. Why don't you go and make me coffee and come down and we'll... And how about, here's a good idea, we'll read from the screenplay of Hannah and Her Sisters. Okay? 5 years later, we're right here. Okay? We made it. Diane Wiest has been there since like day five or six or something. And Diane Wiest, her two Oscars, the first one for Hannah and Her Sisters, she plays an erotic... A neurotic. Did I say erotic? She plays a neurotic an insecure young woman, which is what I was at the time, okay? And she plays Mia Farrow's sister, and at that time, she was tapping into every anxiety and question about my life and where I was going that I ever had, and I related it to her more than I've ever been before in my life. And I want to demonstrate with a little clip. Let me set it up for you, okay? So in this scene, Diane, I don't know her character's name, is hanging out with her sister, Hannah, I know her name, played by Mia Farrow. So let's roll the clip of Hannah and her sisters.
You know, I just want to look so good, but I don't want to feel, you know, like I'm overdressed or anything.
No, no.
Well, how about this?
No, I really like that. I think that's a pretty color on you.
Did you ever think you'd be helping me buy something to wear to the opera?
But I think it's great. I can't wait to meet him.
He's married, and his wife's in and out of institutions. She's schizophrenic. Sometimes she's terrific, and then she just breaks down. And he has this sweet daughter, and when she goes to college next year, he's going to split permanently. I mean, he's really paid his dues, but then she helped put him through architecture school.
You found all this out on one date?
Well, I think he was dying to open up. It's so sad. Now, what should I wear to my audition? I've got a singing audition for a Broadway musical. Of course, I'll never get it.
Singing?
Yeah, can you believe it?
Really?
Well, I mean, why not, you know? What have I got to lose?
I didn't know you sang.
Why, you think everybody in musicals sings so well?
No, they sing.
Well, you know, I sing a little, I mean.
Oh.
You know.
I know.
I mean, you know, don't say it that way, you know, because my confidence is not my
strong
point.
I didn't mean that.
You know, I think I can fake my way through a song.
Uh-huh.
Easily. Why, you don't think it's realistic?
I just hate to see you put yourself in a position where you get hurt. You know how you take every single rejection as a confirmation that you have no talent or something?
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll get it.
I hope.
Boy, you really know how to cut me down.
What? No, don't be so sensitive. Can't I say anything?
Well, I sing, for Christ's sake, Hannah. Okay. You heard me sing.
Okay. What happened? You know, we were having a really nice time. Suddenly everything went to bad feeling.
Nobody but you can do that to me. I don't know why.
Look, everything's going your way.
You're right. I'm happy. Why must I let my insecurities spoil everything?
Okay, this is triggering for me, okay? I relate to Diane in this role an unhealthy amount. And, you know, Diane plays another important role in my relationship. There'd be times where I would be lying next to Brian in bed, and he would touch my body, and I would be rigid and cold lying there. And he would say, "Babe, you need to be a little bit more Barbara Hershey and a little less Diane Wiest, okay?" So much so that the word Wiestian has become an adjective in my life. You know, whenever I'm panicked or harried or deeply insecure, the word pops up. But, you know, Diane Wiest plays a range of roles, okay? So never mind this Oscar-winning performance in Hannah and Her Sisters. I've evolved. I've changed, okay? I've got my own podcast. All these people are looking at me, okay? I have become a star, okay? And this other role in her other Oscar-winning performance in Bullets Over Broadway just really encapsulates how I feel right now. Roll the clip, Brian.
Be joking. You want me to play some frumpy housewife who gets dumped for a flapper? Don't you remember who I am? Don't you know who you represent? I'm Helen Sinclair.
Definitely. You are definitely Helen Sinclair. I look at you and I say Helen Sinclair. But who better to play that role?
Under whose direction? Some novice.
He's the author
of two flops.
Julian says it's the directors that messed up those projects.
Julian Marx. I do plays put on by Belasco or Sam Harris, not some Yiddish pants salesman turned producer. My ex-husband used to say, if you're gonna go down with the best of them.
Which ex-husband?
Oh, I don't know which ex-husband, the one with the mustache.
Listen to me, authors are very often the best directors of their own work.
She's dowdy. Sid, the ingenue, has all the hotlines. Even the female psychiatrist is a better role.
But the role of Sylvia Poston is the lead.
Sylvia Poston? Even the name reeks of Orbax. I do Electra. I do Lady Macbeth. I do plays by Noel and Phil Barry, or at least Max Anderson.
Helen, listen to me. This is a major part in a serious play. And let's face it, Helen, you have not been in a hit in a long time. In a long, long, long time.
I'm still a star. I never play frumps or virgins.
You are a star because you're great. And you are a great star. But let me tell you something, Helen. In the last couple of years, you're better known as an adulteress and a drunk. And I say this in all due respect.
Look, I haven't had a drink since New Year's Eve.
You're talking Chinese New Year's.
Naturally. Still, that's 2 days, Sid. You know how long that is for me?
I give you my past, present, and future, everybody. Number one, vote Diane Weiss. Thank you.
He can be very Weistian. It's very true.
That means I have range.
Okay. So speaking of frumps and virgins, I am not going to beat around the bush, and I'm just going to let you know who I'm nominating. There is going to be no issue of what happened with Sean. You definitely have all heard of this woman. Of course, I'm speaking about Julie Andrews. Yes? Yep. Oh, ooh, who's getting warm applause already, Diane? All right. No, okay. So Julie Andrews. All right, here we go. First of all, a show of hands, have you seen The Sound of Music? Yes. Okay, have you seen Mary Poppins? Yes, okay. So these films are imprinted on our childhood psyches, yes? As a child, I saw these films as well. As I grew up, I found myself that despite being an American boy in suburban Massachusetts, I was able to duplicate Julie Andrews' dulcet tones. I was able to say, feed the birds, tuppence a bag, long before I even knew what tuppence were. Now, as Sean will tell you, Sean is firmly of the opinion that actually Julie Andrews is the only impersonation that I can actually do well, right? Meaning that, you know, I can not just impersonate the line she actually says in movies, but I can do things like take a Beyoncé lyric and say it in Julie Andrews' voice. So I can do things like saying, to the left, to the left, everything you own in a box to the left, you must not know about me. So it led me to ask the question, okay, what is it about Julie Andrews that I can relate to? Because actually, I don't particularly like The Sound of Music. I don't actually, Mary Poppins is better. It's true. I don't like The Sound of Music. I'm sorry to the audience if you disagree, but it is clearly Rodgers and Hammerstein's least good musical. I'm sorry. Okay? You know, give me Carousel South Pacific any day. I Have Confidence. That's not a good song. Okay, anyway. Okay, so what is it about Julie Andrews? And I've started to realize that Julie and I are very much simpatico because people, they try to box us in, okay? They don't understand us, and here's the story. So Julie Andrews, picture it, 1965, 1966, 1967, the mid to late 60s, Julie Andrews is the biggest box office star in the world, right? This is why she's imprinted on our brains. Mary Poppins, The Sound of Music, these are the blockbusters of their day. But how many of you have seen Darling Lily? Has anybody seen that? The Gertrude Lawrence biopic star, exclamation point? No. From the heights of fame of Julie Andrews playing, you know, these kind of saccharine roles, caring for children, Julie wanted to break out. She wanted to do other things. She wanted to prove that she was a full human being, and most importantly, that she was a full, sensual, sexual human being. And audiences did not like this. I suppose that's what happens when your two most famous roles are playing a nun and a benevolent alien who lives on a cloud. You know? I mean, like, how does Mary Poppins actually reproduce? It's a mystery that I think none of us want to know the answer to, okay? But so this is like me, okay? Like Julie and I, we're both known for being earnest, like goody two shoes, like doing like the health and safety warning, being very kind of, you know, people admire us, but they're not like hungering for us. You know what I mean? There's not a desire that no one allows us to have our full carnality, okay? And so if you look at Julie Andrews' film career, post these highlights in the 1960s, she is desperately trying to play roles where she is a full carnal human being, a person with desires, and audiences just weren't having it, okay? So I have brought two underseen Julie Andrews performances to bring to you. Trigger warning, you're about to see Julie Andrews have sex. In a manner of speaking, okay? So if that's not for you, just, you know, get ready, folks. So Julie Andrews, I mean, even when she took on in the 80s, she took on Oscar bait type roles. She's in a film called Duet for One, which we're about to see a little bit about. So Duet for One is a classic. Obviously, she already had an Oscar. She won one for her film debut, playing Mary Poppins. But in Duet for One, she plays a fictionalized violinist based on Jacqueline Dupré. Okay, so here we go. She's got an increasing illness, which is a classic Oscar thing. She's got multiple sclerosis that's moving in on her. And she's increasingly becoming more and more incapacitated. She plays the violin. There's a stunning cast, okay? Her agent, Shelley Winters. Her campy gay student, who she tutors in the violin, a young Rupert Everett, okay, everybody? Her psychotherapist, none other than Ingmar Bergman's leading man, Max von Sydow, okay? This should be a big role. But the pièce de résistance, who does Julie get to have sex with in this movie? A hunky young Liam Neeson. That's what we're about to watch, okay? Now, I'm not going to say this is a good movie. It's actually a terrible movie. It's a terrible movie. It's so bad that when you see this clip, I had to like rip it off of a really, really poor YouTube copy. So I'm sorry. Liam Neeson looks much hunkier coming out of the shower when you kind of see a pristine print than what we're about to see. But so just to set this up here, okay, Julie is increasingly becoming incapacitated with multiple sclerosis. Liam Neeson, employing I think, passable Cockney accent, is a scrap metal collection guy who's coming around to her house because she's throwing away all her trophies from orchestra awards that she's won all through her years because she can no longer play the violin. And they begin shtupping, okay? So here they are in post-coital bliss. This is Julie Andrews sensually alive as you've maybe never seen her before.
Well, how was it, babe?
You know I always like it with you, Harry.
Yeah, me and all.
Why is that?
Why? I think you know. You're great, babes. Great.
You like me being a cripple, don't you, Harry?
Eh? Stop it. Stop it. You're not a cripple, you daft.
Go on, admit it. It turns you on.
What? Get him off it.
What's your favorite? Paraplegics.
Uncomfortable.
Smarty pants. I think you're very smart, don't you? Why aren't you just glad you found somebody you like to do it with?
Oh, Harry. I really like you.
I like you and all. But we've got about as much in common as a cat and a mouse, and don't ask me which is which.
If I kept this clip playing for a little while longer, you would see there's a moment where Liam Neeson kind of strokes Julie's back and she goes, "Ooh." And I think that encapsulates what's so difficult about it, right? So we've heard her crystalline tones saying that the hills are alive with the sound of music, and it somehow freaks you out to hear her saying, "Oh, I bet it really turns you on, doesn't it?" It just sounds wrong. If you have any interest in this film, in the scene that follows, her Italian housekeeper is making her a dish with fish, and it turns out that her Italian housekeeper, who's a woman, has had a long simmering lesbian attraction to her. So this is a really strange movie. It is a very strange movie. Julie slaps the woman in the face, so that's not very politically correct either. But so I'm not saying that this movie was good, and this movie, in fact, failed at the box office, despite playing someone with a disability and a classical musician. I mean, it got Emily Watson an Oscar nomination several years later for Hillary and Jackie, not for Julie, because we don't want to see Julie as a full woman. And perhaps the most famous example of audiences reacting badly to Julie Andrews' full and complete sexual humanity was the film S.O.B. Oh, I see some nods in the room. Have you actually seen it? Okay, so this gentleman here has just revealed the money shot, okay? Now, the thing you have to remember about this film, which we're about to see, is that it's directed by Julie's very own husband, Blake Edwards, a man who presumably knew her very well. All right, and it is an autobiographical satire of Hollywood in which a thinly veiled version of himself, Blake Edwards, who directed Breakfast at Tiffany's and The Pink Panther, is married to a woman who is known for being a sort of saccharine star, and her career is going down the tubes. So he remakes one of her movies with elaborate section, sort of like softcore porn. So here we have Julie Andrews' own husband making a movie in which he's satirizing her image and putting her body on display in what can only be described as a Freudian dream ballet, okay? So we can't be here for the whole evening to show you the whole thing. There are you know, inflatable phalluses that grow at different points. There are burlesque dancers that Julie, wearing a flowing red robe, kind of swirls around. And then she goes into this hell mouth and encounters some Bob Fosse-esque dancers who are kind of confronting her with her repressed sexuality. You think I'm kidding, but that is exactly what you're about to see, okay? Until we get the climax of Julie Andrews bearing it all for us in S.O.B. Gird your loins. The build-up is intense. Thank you. And we'll just have to leave that there for you to enjoy, ladies and gentlemen. So I leave you with that scarifying image, okay, to remind us that we're all full human beings, okay? Julie Andrews has now, she's given up on ever trying to be sensual again. She's become, you know, the Princess of Genovia and the Princess Diaries. She's retired to Gstaad, Switzerland. But she's still writing children's books, and I want to point out that the first children's book she ever published, the name of it was The Last of the Really Great Wang Doodles. That's not, I didn't make that up. You can look that up. Wang Doodles. This woman clearly still wants to have her whole self be understood, and so do I. So I nominate Dame Julie Andrews for the Hall of Fame. Thank you very much. All right. So that was our preamble, Sean. I'm going to pass you this microphone.
Thank you, Brian.
People have gotten a real insight into our sex life. It's basically like Diane Wiest and Julie Andrews in bed together,
trying,
every night.
Begging each other to have sex.
Yeah, it's incredible. let's cleanse ourselves of those images and bring up the people that everybody's really here to see, which is our three amazing guests. So I will cue the music, and Sean will introduce them if they could come up onto the stage.
Okay, once the music starts. Okay, first up, we have a BAFTA-nominated filmmaker, comedian, actor, author. She's published 3 books. It's Nat Lutzema! Woo! Our next guest is a stand-up comedian, writer, improviser, drag king, presenter, and is from Houston, Texas. It's Kima Bob! And our final guest is a comedian, activist, and day jobber, just the same as the rest of us. It's Sean Fay. Thank you to these 3 celebrities who are joining us here.
And thank you also to Giuseppe Verdi for providing us with the triumphal march from Aida. Anybody know, just pop quiz, which Oscar host entered the ceremony to the triumphal march of Aida? Is there anyone in the room? Yes. It is Whoopi Goldberg. Very good prize. Very good knowledge. All right. So, Sean, you are going to tell our panelists how to proceed.
Okay. So, we're going to do a little bit of a kind of a Stars in Your Eyes thing. Now, does anyone remember Stars in Their Eyes? Okay, so it was where 3 people kind of, several people became celebrities for one night. And what they would do is the host, who I think is a convicted pedophile, is it? Anyway, the host, we'll just edit this out if he's not. The host would kind of ask them questions to see, you know, who they were going to be. So we're going to start with Nat. So, Nat, would you like to maybe, give us some hints about who you're going to be tonight? Or who you're... No, would you like to give us some hints about who you're talking about tonight?
Okay, this has put me on the spot. If you're with this person, you'd feel really safe. You'd feel like, wherever you're going, even if it's somewhere really dangerous, she'd probably have some snacks in her pocket. You'd feel like that. What else? Like, if she turned out to be a bad person, you'd be genuinely quite disappointed. You'd be like, oh, well, I believed in you, so, you know. Unlike when a lot of other stuff comes out and you're like, obviously. She's like a nurturing tree, guys, and we're all squirrels. Yeah, yeah. See, Kima knows who it is, and she's nodding. She's like, yeah, so you nailed it.
Any guesses from the audience?
Was it a bit esoteric?
What if I say Australian? Australian.
Oh, I mean, I could have gone literal, yeah. Yeah, well, if that's how we're playing it.
There's no Australian actresses. Do you want to just tell us?
Do you know, I reckon if I say this, you might get it. So often plays a mum. They've got their thinking faces on. Some of them haven't, just dead-eyed. No. It's a weird choice, but throw it out. Oh, yeah, fine.
Can I give you a hint?
Yeah.
Evil. Not her, but just evil.
Oh, yes. I was about to fight you for that, but yeah, in recently, evil. And very sexual.
Safe but evil.
Safe but evil. And on television, suddenly surprisingly sexual. Hello, welcome to that latecomer who walked in on me saying, suddenly surprisingly sexual. I'm amazed you didn't just do a U-turn. I'm like, this is not the room for me.
No, it's definitely the room for that guy.
Should I just tell them?
Yeah.
Because now they've gone past guessing and they're just like, well, now I'm annoyed. Toni Collette. Oh! Thanks, guys, thanks. I didn't make her, but I feel some responsibility. Hereditary. Oh, yeah. Evil, evil. And my love for Toni Collette did grow very slowly because she does... this sounds like a broad brushstroke, but she really does... always, it seems, play mums. And I'm so unmaternal. I had a cat for 6 months until my parents had to adopt her off me last year. And I still talk bitterly about the impact it had on my career those 6 months. It's really hard being a working mother, actually. Don't think you realise I was juggling it all, okay? So, although, weirdly, ever since I was 26, I've gone up for auditions to play mothers, which I can't help but take a bit personally, because I wasn't like, you know, a teenage mum. I'd have to say things like, Jocasta, have you done your Chinese homework? And I'd be like, lads, I'm 26, I moisturise. Come on. My daughter's 19. Yeah, fucking grip. And then when I was 32, I played a alcoholic 45-year-old. So, I don't know, I might as well just open beer bottles with my face at this point. Dear. But yeah, Toni Collette. I just think she's amazing. And she so often plays mums and just, but such a broad range as well. Because like when I would go in and audition for mum roles, like a lot of the time they would be not particularly well written. You know, they'd be written by a writer that you got the feeling didn't much like women and kind of thought they were always nagging and tidying up after you. But the mums she plays, like they range all over the place. Like Hereditary, terrifying the way back when she's really timid and unsure of herself. And The Sixth Sense, where like she's so generous. And I think when Brian said as well, that must have been one of the only Oscar clips they showed when she was nominated for an Oscar, where she's completely silent the whole way through. It's all Haley Joel Osment doing all the acting before his head got really big and his face got really small. Just that precious time he had right there with his normal face. And she's amazing. And even, I don't know if anyone's seen Krampus. Yeah, thank you. One woman at the back admitting it like a crime. Yes, I've seen that film. It's a Christmas film and it's absolutely fine. But I love it because she's in it. And Little Miss Sunshine, she's amazing in that. She's just like holding the whole family together, but like in such an unshowy way. And so when I was trying to find clips of her, there's not actually a lot of grandstanding because that's not what she does. She works really like collaboratively and generously around like younger actors. So we're going to show two clips. One of them we could only find from a video essay. So slightly distractingly, the emotion she's portraying is just written on screen. So... if you're a fan of not having to think much, that's the clip for you guys. So, give your brain a rest.
The final scene of The Way, Way Back lasts just under a minute, and Collette remains silent the entire time. Despite her lack of speech, this is her defining moment in the film. It's at this point that she finally realizes what's important and sees what she needs to be for her son. Watch as she cycles through emotions without saying a word. Collette to give a big speech about how she's going to make things right. It completely loses its impact. While I may always think of her as a movie mom, Toni Collette brings this level of nuance to all of her roles, and that's why she is one of the most talented actresses working today.
It's funny because in the next scene she actually eats the boy.
Even then, when that narrator says, even though I think of her as a movie mum, she can give a performance of nuance. Oh, because once a kid falls out of you, all your nuance comes out too. Maybe you're still a human being, dickwad. Honestly, I really wish he'd written climbing when she was climbing, though. All the feelings. And this next clip, right, this is actually one of the only grandstanding performances I could find off her, where she really just, like, chews the scenery. And I think you probably guess which one it is. It's the dinner scene from Hereditary, where, like, it's a little bit like Tilda Swinton in We Need to Talk About Kevin, where you're like, I will never be a parent. It looks terrifying. So, yeah, this is that scene. Well, in fact, when you say that scene from Hereditary, that could be when, you know, what's it bursts into flames, or there's many, but this is when she really chews up her son.
What?
Is there something on your mind?
Is there something on your mind?
It just seems like there might be something you want to say.
Peter?
Like what? I mean, why would I want to say something so I could watch you sneer at me?
Sneer at you? I don't ever sneer at you.
Oh, sweetie, you don't have to. You get your point across.
Okay, so fine, then say what you want to say, then.
Peter.
I don't want to say anything. I've tried saying
okay,
things.
So try again. Release yourself.
Oh, release you mean?
Yeah, fine, release me. Just say it. Just fucking say it.
Don't you swear at me, you little shit. Don't you ever raise your voice at me. I am your mother. Do you understand? All I do is worry and slave and defend you. And all I get back is that fucking face on your face. So full of disdain and resentment and always so annoyed. Well, now your sister is dead. And I know you miss her. And I know it was an accident. And I know you're in pain. And I wish I could take that away from you. I wish I could shield you from the knowledge that you did what you did. But your sister is dead. She is gone forever. And what a waste. If it could have maybe brought us together or something. If you could have just said, I'm sorry, or faced up to what happened. Maybe, man, we could do something with this. But you can't take responsibility for anything. So now I can't accept. And I can't forgive. Because nobody admits anything they've done!
I get really sweaty when she does that scene. I know that's not like a sign of great art, but sorry if you haven't seen that film yet. Someone did die. Just realised that halfway through. I was like, spoilers! But yeah, Toni Collette, I just think she is amazing, and I probably had quite a bit of internalised misogyny in me anytime I'd get an audition request to like play a mum, and I'd be like, don't play a nun! And now I'm like, of course I do. That is a fascinating role. If, you know, someone writes you a fascinating role, obviously. So, Toni Collette.
Next up, we have Kima Bob. Kima, tell us a little bit about the actress you've chosen.
Should we do the fun guessy game?
Yeah, let's do it.
My favorite. Okay, so this actress, or shall I say blacktress, has also slept with Liam Neeson on screen, not sure about off. We can only hope. Yes. This person, if you were in trouble, if you were feeling confused, if you were feeling down, she would tell you to get your shit together. And then maybe make you cry, and then you guys would cry together, and it would be a beautiful mess. Yeah.
Any guesses?
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Why make it impossible to guess? Just be straightforward. Guys, yes, of course it's Viola Davis. When I heard about the opportunity to, like, stand for an actress, I was like, easy peasy lemon squeezy. But also beautiful cover girl, you know what I mean? Viola Davis is, I'd say, inspiring on many levels, right? She's like a change maker, a history maker. Let's get awards on it, guys. Let's do some awards. She has the triple crown of acting, or as I like to call it, toe. A Tony, an Oscar, and an Emmy. It's amazing. She's the only black person to have this. Very, very fun stuff. And she's the first black actress, to win or be nominated, I don't know, for 3 Academy Awards. Whatever the stats are, she's amazing. What I really appreciate about her is I feel like her range, I don't know, isn't like I don't, she's not funny, okay? I've not really seen a lot of funny Viola, okay? But I love me a dramatic queen. I do. My life is confusing and occasionally sad, and I just want, you know, an actress who's going through more shit than I am, and Viola never lets me down. Straight up. So in my first clip, this is like 40%, like 40-50% Viola drama, you know what I mean? Because it's on a scale. This is like level 1.5 of Viola drama and how to get away with murder. And she's just such a boss in this, you know? She goes from being like totally composed to being like, ah! But also is still such a boss. It's out of control.
In 1993, you developed the land at Penn's Landing into what is now Truco Plaza. Is this correct?
Let's see. I know this. You know this. The few million people annually that traffic the plaza know this. Can we cut to the chase here?
My constituents
expect me to make the most of my time.
I have a record of an injunction brought against your project by Tricia Stanley, advocating for the thousands of citizens living in low-income housing who would be displaced by your project.
Was there a question in there?
10 days after Miss Stanley was murdered, your attorney struck down the injunction, and your project went forward unopposed. So my question is, Senator Truco, did you have Tricia Stanley murdered?
Ooh, tension.
Are you out of your mind?
Your Honor, this has gone on long enough.
Did you convince your tenant, Linda Morelli, to testify that Tricia Stanley was killed by your boyfriend, David Allen?
You're way off base. I recommend you rein this in.
Explain why your eviction suit against Miss Morelli was dropped despite her inability to pay rent.
Cheating?
Is it because her lost rent money was nothing compared to the millions you made once Miss Stanley was out of your way? Answer the question, Senator. Why was Linda Morelli granted these concessions?
Mr. Chief Justice, I have extended great deference to the court by showing up here today, but I am not going to put up with this any longer.
I am sorry, Senator, if you do not have the time to answer for who bore the real cost of your development.
Objection!
Not just Tricia Stanley and her boyfriend, David Allen, who served 21 years in
prison.
Your
Honor, please.
For the thousands who were displaced in the name of lining your pockets.
Keating?
The majority whom were poor, powerless, and didn't bear the color of skin desirable to your business interests. You tore a community apart. You tore families apart. You destroyed lives, Senator. Admit it. Admit you killed Tricia Stanley and had my client David Allen set up for her murder.
That is enough. You hear me? You say another word, they'll have no choice but to throw you in jail.
Is it enough? Is it enough? Ah! 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 That's not even the top setting! This vibrator goes higher. It's out of control. Oh, my God. And that guy, I just love this scene as well because, like, this rich white man is like, I'm going to rich white man my way out of this. And she's like, I'm going to stand my ground. Oh, it's amazing. She's like, oh, I'm a high-powered attorney. Oh, I find this really interesting because in Viola's career, it feels like there's not a lot of middle ground. Like, it's either, like, made slavey person or Annalise Keating. But I feel like she, like, slays them both. But I will say, I would like to see her do something chill, like, you know, like being an interior decorator or, like, the owner of a cupcake shop. But yeah, so let's ramp it up a notch, you know what I mean? That was like an emotional warm-up. Now, let's get our eyes wet a little bit. I'm not going to lie to you and say I've seen this movie. But I feel like I am going to illegally download it tonight. So that's a start. So this is the film adaptation of the August Wilson play Fences, which she's like with Denzel Washington, and they're like, oh, we're amazing, and it's great, I assume.
me and
I stood on first base for 18 years, and I thought, well, goddammit, go on for
it. We ain't talking about baseball. We're talking about you going off and laying up with another woman and bringing her home to me. That's what we're talking about. We're
Rose,
not talking about no baseball.
You're not listening to me. I'm trying to explain it to you the best way I know how. It's not easy for me to admit that I've been standing in the same place for 18 years.
Well, I've been standing with you. I've been right here with you, Troy. I got a life, too. I gave 18 years of my life to stand in the same spot as you. Don't you think I ever wanted other things? Don't you think I had dreams and hopes? What about my life? What about me? Don't you think I ever crossed my mind to want to know other men, that I wanted to lay up somewhere and forget about my responsibilities, that I wanted someone to make me laugh so I could feel good? You're not the only one who's got wants and needs, but I held on to you, Troy. I took all my feelings, my wants and needs and dreams, and I buried them inside you. I planted a seed and watched and prayed over. I planted myself inside you and waited to bloom. It didn't take me no 18 years to realize the soil was hard and rocky and it wasn't never gonna bloom. But I held on to you, Troy. I held you tighter. You was my husband. I owed you everything I had, every part of me I could find to give you. And upstairs in that bedroom with the darkness falling in on me, I gave everything I had to try and erase the doubt that you wasn't the finest man in the world, and wherever you was going, I was going to be there with you because you was my husband. Because that's the only way I was going to survive as your wife. You're always talking about what you give and what you don't have to give. But you take too, Troy. You take and don't even know nobody's giving.
You say I take and don't give.
Troy,
you
hurt me.
I take and don't
give. Troy, you're hurting my arm.
I don't
like
give you everything I got. Don't you tell that lie.
Troy.
Don't you tell that lie on me.
Troy, you're hurting me. Troy. Troy.
All right. That's strike two. You stay away from around me, boy. Don't you strike out. You living with a full count.
This guy in his baseball. Don't you strike out?
Don't you strike out!
What is that? I don't know. I haven't seen it. But yeah, it's wild. It's intense. I'm not trying to strike out. But yeah, man, that one of the things that I think a lot of people pride Viola Davis on is her dedication to crying. And what you'll notice is all of the liquids on her face came out of her face. And that is something I really admire in anyone. Yeah, I really dig her. I feel like she stands up for what she believes in. And like, I feel like she's a multidimensional woman, but I do like to imagine her as this like Annalise Keating of Hollywood, and she's like, you can't win awards for roles that don't exist, you know? And she's like, make me an awesome movie. And she's like, I'm an executive produce that. And she's like, what did someone say? Harriet Tubman biopic? Like, oh, just a legend, just a hero. Yeah, and a badass woman, Viola Davis, you guys, Viola D.
Give it up for Kima Bob, yes. Sidebar, I will say that Viola Davis did say that she took a role in Suicide Squad because she got to shoot a gun.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God, in Widows, so many guns, so many guns.
These Americans. Bloody love them.
And our final panelist tonight is, as we all know, writer, activist, comedian, and all-round social media celebrity. I was going to say Twitter, but it goes beyond that, doesn't it?
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
No one cares. We're talking about actresses. I mean,
it's Sean Fay, everybody.
Thank you. So I'll do an anonymous introduction. So the actress that I'm presenting tonight, if you know of her, you probably fucking hate her. Because everyone does, because I decided to pick a challenge. She's not my favorite actress. She's my, like, third favorite actress. My favorite actress is Meryl Streep. She's, like, no one's typical favorite actress. But basically, I'm going to be attempting to rehabilitate her in your minds. And I think if I give some clues about her, you'll think of her as prissy, preened, stage schooly, annoying. And I suppose another way that I could introduce her is that, like, you know, she progressed from being a childhood actress into being an Academy Award-winning star. If I was going to pass it, I would say there was a time when men were kind and their voices were soft and their voices... Then it all went wrong. This evening, I'm going to be rehabilitating the actress Anne Hathaway. I know, you all fucking hate her. So, this summer, there was a renewal, a revival of the Ocean's 11 franchise, an all-female revival titled Ocean's 8, fronted by Sandra Bullock. And it was a reboot of the 2000 series starring George Clooney and Brad Pitt and Matt Damon. And all of the reviews... gave it kind of, you know, variable to positive reviews. But one thing they all agreed on was that there was a surprise standout star. In The New Republic, Joe Livingston wrote, "The funniest performances come in a bizarre twist. Anne Hathaway. I wouldn't have believed Anne Hathaway could steal a scene from much more performed actresses like Mindy Kaling or Helena Bonham Carter. But the role of flinty narcissist was with hidden smarts is perfect for her." Shady. Vanity Fair declared her the jewel in the crown of the film, saying Hathaway does not merely steal the show, she runs away with it in 5-inch stilettos and a hot pink dress. What Hathaway brings to this caper is precisely what the movie itself lacks, unpredictability. In the film, Anne Hathaway plays Daphne Kruger. She's preening, she's spoilt. People saw it as self-referential. Many reviews seem surprised by Hathaway's turn as a comic actress. The performance, however, marked a new turn in celebrity blog coverage and perceptions and portrayals of her as an actor. Since 2013, Anne Hathaway has been endured a sustained campaign of internet hate, to the point where it's brought up in every interview with her. There was a hashtag during her Oscar season, hashtag Hathahater. After Ocean's 18, there was "I was a Hathahater until now" from Glamour. The celebrity blog site Betches had an investigation 5 days ago asking, "Investigatory report, is Anne Hathaway still annoying?" Before that, they had had 10 celebrities we hate more than Anne Hathaway in honor of her birthday. Anne Hathaway is sick of getting asked why the internet hates her, so let's remind her. Anne Hathaway just ruined Beyonce for the rest of us. Anne Hathaway just had a baby and we're already annoyed. As you can see, that's like funny to the point of being annoying. The website Betches, I think it's like Betches? It's run by white gay men. Kel Surprise, it's rude and misogynistic. I think what happened to her there is there was a point in Anne Hathaway's career around the time that she starred as Fantine in Les Miserables and was, you know, pretty much billed by all critics as due for an Oscar that year, that she registered to people in a way that was irritating. She was try hard. She wanted it. She was stage school. She made it into an issues character, right? She went around on the red carpets being like, "I'm doing this for all the Fantines who still exist in the world," which is like, you're not a sex worker activist, you know? Do you know what I mean? Piss off. So, like, you know, and then the final thing was that she won the Oscar and nursed it like it was a baby and went, "It came true," which obviously is profoundly and deeply annoying, and I say that even as I champion her. In 2013, the year after she won that Oscar, the New York Times asked, "Do we really hate Anne Hathaway?" And I think the writer Sarah Nicole Prickett, who is a very great writer on a lot of stuff about popular culture, said, "It's not Anne Hathaway I really hate. It's the lesser, real-life Anne Hathaways I have known, princessy, theatre school girls who have no game and no sex appeal and eat raisins for dessert." But then, like, even as I was preparing this last night, because I do prepare, like, this is very well prepared, thank you. I was talking about it with a man that I've been dating for the last few weeks, and he was quite drunk, and he was texting me, being like, "Oh, you know, what are you working on?" And I was like, "Well, I'm actually working on a blog, a live podcast at a queer film festival. You wouldn't know about it." And And he was like, here's an interesting opinion. I don't think Anne Hathaway is sexy. And I was like, well, I think the opinions of straight white men are not remotely interesting on women in popular culture. But even that, the idea that, like, her lack of sexiness is something that, like, pretty much, as I was scrolling through yesterday, every celebrity blog brought up. There was even one comparator to her, like, 2013 Oscar partner. She won Best Supporting Actress. Jennifer Lawrence won Best Actress. Was that Jennifer Lawrence's face was more round, more benevolent, more feminine, more smiley, and Hathaway had a smug face. It was too, like, it was too angular. It was too, like, there are seriously blog posts about this. And I think it's something that's followed Taylor Swift. I think it's followed Keira Knightley. I think it is a symptom of sexism that we deliver towards actresses that their male co-stars do not receive. But I don't think she should just be rehabilitated in some sort of woke expression of the fact that we're all uncomfortable misogyny now that we've been on Twitter for a long time. I think it is because her talent and range deserve it. The director, Gary Marshall, the late director, Gary Marshall, who Julia Roberts was his protege, another person that has struggled through periods of not being liked. When he found her for The Princess Diaries, in which she starred with Julie Andrews, there's a crossover. And I loved seeing Julie Andrews go from, like, sort of, like, fail nun to sex goddess, I mean, mood. Yeah, I think, like, he said that he liked the fact that she was so well adapted to being a comic actress, Gorky, before her transformation into kind of a gleaming princess. So the first clip I'm going to show you is to try and exhibit the fact that she is a brilliant, both serious and comic actress. And I think, like, a film that's not very well known is Jonathan Demme's Rachel Getting Married. And if I give some sort of background to this film, it's a 2008 film. And in the film, Hathaway plays Kim Buckman. She's just been allowed away from drug and alcohol rehab for 2 days. And it's because it's her sister's wedding. And the film basically examines her interaction with her family as she returns. And it is an examination of the self-indulgence of the addict, of the drug addict, of the alcoholic, even when they're recovering. And it's a very powerful way of doing that because she doesn't even tend to. She's coming with the best will in the world, but she fails all the time. She subsumes from her sister's wedding all the attention all the time. There is an excruciating rehearsal dinner scene. Is this the one that we're watching? Or maybe it's another one?
I think this is an AA.
Yeah, that's it. So there is an excruciating... I'm just checking. I'm on it. There's an excruciating rehearsal dinner scene in which she basically takes the mic from everyone that's celebrating a wedding in order to talk about herself and her recovery. And it's shot in kind of real time. It's a really beautiful film. I really would recommend everyone reading it. Watching it, if you don't like Anne Hathaway, it's quite like a standout performance. Anyway, as the film transpires, this is going to be a spoiler, because probably most of you haven't seen it. There is an admittance. She has lied several times throughout the film, which is revealed, is that she's inspired people at her AA and NA meetings. With fake stories about how she became an alcoholic, how she became an addict. And people come up to her and congratulate her in front of her family and talk about the awful sexual abuse she endured as a child. And her sister is furious because she did not endure sexual abuse as a child and because the reality is she would rather deliver that I'm a child sexual abuse survivor, and that's why I'm a drug addict, than the truth, which is that there isn't really a reason, or it's an ambiguous reason. So it's a really, like, fascinating examination to the kind of, like, pathologies of addiction. And this clip is where she finally admits the trauma that her brother Ethan, her younger brother Ethan, she took a car ride with him, which she shouldn't have. And this is the reason for all of the problems that she causes.
Hi, I'm Kim. I'm an addict. I am 9 months clean. When I was 16, I was babysitting my little brother. And I was, I'd taken all these Percocet, and I was unbelievably high. And I,
we'd driven over to the park on Lakeshore.
And he was in his red socks, just running around in these piles of leaves. And He would bury me, and I would bury him in the leaves. And he was pretending that he was a train. And so he was charging through the leaves, making tracks, and I was the caboose, and I was, so he kept saying, coal caboose, coal caboose. And, it was time to go, and I was driving home, and I lost control of the car, and he drove off the bridge, and the car went into the lake, and I couldn't get him out of his car seat, and he drowned. And I struggle with God so much because I can't forgive myself, and I don't really want to right now. I can live with it, but I can't forgive myself. And sometimes I don't want to believe in a God that could forgive me, but I do want to be sober. Mm-hmm. I'm alive and I'm present, and there's nothing controlling me. If I hurt someone, I hurt someone. I can apologize and they can forgive me or not, but I can change. And I just wanted to share that and say congratulations that God makes you look up. I'm so happy for you. But if he doesn't, come here. That's all. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, so I think that's like it's a really stunning performance. It's a really beautiful performance, actually, and because actually that's a very sympathetic moment. But she isn't sympathetic throughout the film, as most addicts are not. But yeah, I think like to me, where I would want to counteract the stage school thing of Les Misérables, like her performance as Fantine. The reason that it seemed that the public had turned against her was because she had performed what was known as a serious role, as a she's going to win this Oscar role. And what started to happen is that she started to inhabit that persona more. And she started to perform it on the red carpet. So she started talking about sex worker politics, having no real clue about sex worker politics. And being like, I want to represent all the Fantines that exist now. So, well, we're not in 19th century France, so there aren't really many. And it became more and more complex, and she tried to turn what was essentially a musical theatre character into an issues character. And I think this is like a much more interesting portrayal of that, how she portrays someone that is very damaged, very broken, and morally ambiguous in the present. I would also say that I think she's a great comic actress. I think Bride Wars with Kate Hudson. I think what's interesting about her in The Devil Wears Prada, which is probably one of my favorite films of all time because I used to be a gay man, is that she is often put into the role of being the straight character to perform off other someone else's kind of comic will. Meryl Streep, obviously, in that case. But she is kind of a comic actress in her own right. I think her performance in Ocean's 8 is great. I think her performance in Bride Wars, for example, is great. But I also just think her general comic vibe, which is something she drew on in Ocean's 8, which is a comic performance she's been really validated for, has been there throughout. And one classic one is in The Dark Knight, which is 2012, which she was oddly slated for by a lot of male critics. Female and gay male critics, straight male critics didn't like her, sort of like, but everyone else kind of loved her because it's vampy and campy, right? Like it was supposed to be a serious Batman appraisal. But her portrayal of Selina Kyle as Catwoman is a classic. If you're a anti-capitalist queer bitch, it's the perfect performance. She, in largely a film that has a politics that says that essentially we have to enforce law and order and clamp down on all grassroots anti-capitalist movements, Selina Kyle is the only character in the film who gives voice to the idea that actually that's not the most interesting or even fun or even sexy, God forbid, that a leftist revolution could be sexy. she's the only person that gives voice to that. And so I was going to give my second clip a famous monologue from that, where she's obviously like batten down the hatches. And this is one that I like to whisper in the ear on a first date when he thinks I'm going to kiss him. Let's go.
Everything we do is collated and quantified. Everything sticks.
Was that how you justify stealing?
I take what I need from those who have more than enough. I don't stand on the shoulders of people with less.
Robin Hood?
I think I do more to help someone than most of the people in this room. Than you.
I think maybe you're assuming a little too much.
Maybe you're being unrealistic about what's really in your pants other than your wallet.
Ouch.
You think all this can last? There's a storm coming, Mr. Wayne. You and your friends better batten down the hatches, because when it hits, you're all going to wonder how you ever thought you could live so large and leave so little for the rest of us.
You sound like you're looking forward to it.
I'm adaptable.
Those pearls do look better on you than they did in my safe. But I still can't let you keep them.
It's iconic to have stolen from a man and him still want to kiss you, I think. But yeah, I think like, I'm going to just quickly conclude. I think Anne Hathaway is an example of the gender disparity in Hollywood film. I think the fact that like, pretty much there is a cyclical nature to all actresses' careers, and we've seen it with Jennifer Lawrence herself. Subsequently, I think it was there with Keira Knightley. It's this idea that if you are too perfect, too preened, you're irritating. And I dislike that sexist persecution and purgatorial periods that she had to experience. But I also just think she is deserving of a rehabilitation because she's self-referential and wry quite often in all of her career. And I also think she just has the artistic integrity, as I've displayed through the clips, and a sense of kind of like joie de vivre that deserves being invested in. And I think people should like her more.
Thank you, Sean Fay.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, to quote Barbara Streisand, the time has come. It is time for us to have our moment of populism here. This is true democracy, all right? We have five nominees to enter the Broad Appeal All-Stars Hall of Fame. Is that what we're calling it? Okay. I will recount those nominees. All right. Choose now who you want to vote for because, well, I get this is like voting by applause. So I suppose you can vote for more than one, but if you really want one to win, you've got to applaud loudly. And we have a judge, yes?
Martha here?
Okay. Martha, yeah. So this is Martha Margotson, who's one of the programmers here at Fringe.
We've chosen her because she has expert hearing. Yes. And she's absolutely objective.
Yeah.
So we are going to go by applause as we name the actresses in the order that they were nominated. So choose who you're going to apply for. Martha, get ready to listen. Okay. Our first nominee, the neurotic Diane Wiest. Our next nominee, the fully sensual Julie Andrews. Okay. And our third nomination goes to mom intensity and mom caringness and pregnant silences of Toni Collette. Okay. All right. Nominee number four, the ultimate icon, powerful goddess, Viola Davis. And to conclude, all the way through rehab, Anne Hathaway. Martha, it's a tough call. It's a squeaker. Who do you think won? Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, congratulations to Viola Davis for being the first ever actress to enter the Broad Appeal Hall of Fame. And Sean, we have to say a few thank yous, don't we?
Yes, we do. Well, first of all, I have to thank Will and Helen, who have been on hand for getting all the setup and all the audio, and who've been doing every film or event you see here at Hackney House during Fringe Queer Film and Arts Fest is thanks to these two. So they deserve another round of applause. Do it. I want to thank our three panelists, and I want to draw attention to their social media handles. Nat Lertzema is at Nat Lertzema. Yep. Kima is at Kima's Voice. And Sean Fay is at Sean Fay. Very easy to remember. Okay, we are at Broad Appeal Pod. I'm at Sean McGovern X. This is at BA Mullen Speaks. And thank you, the audience, for making this happen. Applaud yourselves.
Please listen to the podcast, subscribe, enjoy. There's nearly 60 episodes that you can find of the two of us rambling about actresses, and enjoy the rest of Fringe Queer Film and Art Fest. Thank you all, everybody, and have a great night.